Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 9th of April, a beautiful day for a beautiful conversation with beautiful people, and that includes the following. WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Oh, boy, it's been a long time since anybody's called me beautiful.
University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary R. Mayo.
Good morning, and I'll take that beautiful.
There you go. And WAMC newsman, the sunshine in our life, Ray Graff.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Feeling radiant.
Yes. Yes. Very, very radiant. Good morning and welcome. We have a lot to talk about, so we will get right to it. But a reminder, you can get in on the conversation roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Good idea, Alan. Hold it. I have a piece of oatmeal stuck in my throat. Let me just
I'll tweet.
Thank you for sharing.
I'll tweet you too. Yeah, thank you for sharing.
Yes. Yeah. Slurp away. Oh.
All right.
All right. Now let's get back to the show.
A little Diet Pepsi and the chemicals will take over. Okay.
Well, I'm not commenting.
I couldn't believe this when I read this last night, and so let's talk about it. A flaw has been discovered in one of the internet's key and I apologize for sounding like amused, because I'm not. It's sort of more incredulous.
More Chicken Little.
A flaw has been discovered in one of the internet's key security methods, potentially forcing a wide swath of websites to make changes to protect the security of consumers. The problem was first discovered by a team of Finnish security experts and researchers at Google last week and disclosed on Monday. By Tuesday afternoon, a number of large websites, including Yahoo, Facebook, Google, and Amazon Web Services, said they were fixing the problem or had already fixed it. Researchers were still looking at the impact on consumers, but warned it could be significant. Users' most sensitive information, passwords, stored files, bank details, social security numbers, could be vulnerable because of the flaw. My understanding, and Ray, maybe you have a better sense of this than I do, which is when you go onto a website and you are told that you are in a secure site and you have that little padlock.
Yeah.
That padlock may have been pried open and is not the master lock that we thought it was.
Here's the scary part, and I will quote. This is from, I believe, Tumblr, which is part of Yahoo. Okay, and this is actually quoted from New York Times. This still means that the little lock icon, the HTTPS, we all trusted to keep our passwords, personal emails, and credit cards safe, was actually making all that private information accessible to anyone who knew about the exploit. And security researchers say, of course, they think that some people did know about the exploit, and it was found, I guess, 2 years ago. And the website Tumblr goes on, this might be a good day to call in sick and take some time to change your passwords everywhere, especially your high security services like email, file storage, and banking, which may have been compromised by this bug. You know what?
So, Alan, can we have the day off so we can go change our passwords?
Absolutely.
Thank
everybody
you very
out.
Much.
This is what
we're actually having a little meeting at 10 o'clock, which Ray is going to run as our sort of
security expert.
No, we're going to have some security experts here, but
how bad is it? That's what I want to know.
Could be bad.
Am I losing all the money out of my banking account?
Do you have a lot of money?
I do. All I have. Let's put it that way.
What's your password?
Don't you know?
Well,
you knew about the little lock.
You know.
So let me ask two
ask
questions.
Target. I haven't been able to use my bank card since the whole Target fiasco.
Nor have I. Well, I got it. They sent me a new one last week.
So did I. Try using it. It didn't work when I did.
I mean, we have the same
I called them out from the New York State Thruway, and I can't get into my bank. And they go, well, you didn't tell us you were traveling. I said, I have to tell you I'm traveling in New York.
One day we're going to have a whole program about banking and about what the banksters do.
I hate them. Okay, so I mean, they're
except harsh. For a few of them, like
they're
ours, who are very nice to us.
Yeah, very, very nice to us. They're wonderful people, and we couldn't do anything.
Let's go
them.
Back to
all right. So
civilization as we know it is crashing,
and that's the point.
So Ray, that we've had that padlock since the beginning of the internet. So has it been compromised? Is it in the inception, or has it been a way to compromise?
I think it was
through the process.
It was a flaw. And they discovered the vulnerability. They don't know the extent yet. We're going to find out more today. But Rosemary's point that it's the end of civilization is an apt one.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I feared from day one, and I fear will crumble it's crumbling everyone's confidence in using internet. In the old days, you had some information you need secure, you put it in a little safe, or you put it in a safe deposit box. Now, everybody, because it's convenient, goes this route. And now, all of a sudden, they realize, oh, you know, a burglar doesn't have to go into the bank to steal everything. They can sit at their little cubicle in Russia and do it right there or wherever. And so this...
Iowa.
This is maybe not the end of civilization, but it could be big.
It changes the way we do business, shopping and banking and
they call the bug Heartbleed. Yeah. And again, we just found out about this, so we're still dealing with.
And by the way, we're not talking about one group or another. We're talking about everybody here.
Right, everybody. And you said Chicken Little earlier, and you know there is a sort of the sky is falling mentality to this, and you wonder, well, okay, and then maybe everything will be okay. We don't know at this point, but it seems to me that you exercise in the side of caution.
You have to
and look at the way that Ray's looking at this is this will change everything. But my God, no. if you're Amazon, you got to be shaking, right? Well, I mean, because your entire business is from this.
I don't suggest that people do what I would like to do, which is completely pull back from all of this. Go back, find a payphone, start using that.
No, but
stop
I meant
using
be,
online
be
for
nervous.
Everything.
Be nervous about the
everyone should be nervous. However, you know, it has been known that there was this flaw for a year or two, so presumably people have been working on it. You know, they only put the information out after they're pretty sure that they have a fix so that any crook who didn't know about it doesn't learn about it from the news.
Here was the line that sort of really got to me. There's a lot in here that scares you, but here's the line in the article in the Times that hit yesterday that said, actual victims may be out of luck. According to officials, unless an attacker blackmails you or publishes your information online or steals a trade secret and uses it, you won't know if you've been compromised. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it so vicious.
But one should check one's accounts, like I check my bank account.
Yeah.
What do you mean check it to make sure all the money is still there?
Nobody's taken something out that shouldn't be taken out or that what you put in
is
still there.
And not to be facetious, but how do you check it?
Well, you know what you if you go to your bank, they'll tell you what's in your bank account, right?
Yeah.
You know that.
So I
do that all the time.
Right. I check it, but I do it online. That's what I'm saying. I mean, like, I check my bank account, but I do it online.
Yeah,
I check my accounts, but I do it all online. I'm wondering, you know, because they don't
They could
send
actually
you...
give you something that isn't real, is what you're saying.
Right.
Sure,
they could make up a phony bank account.
Well, I don't really know. I don't know what's going on. So I go... They don't send statements anymore. Or most banks don't anymore.
Well, only if you say no.
Or monthly statements, right?
Correct.
Most people do it online.
Correct.
The credit card companies, everything's pretty much done. And Ray, I mean, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, and that's the farthest thing from my genetic.
But here comes a conspiracy.
My genetic code.
Sure.
However. There's always this push by companies, from everybody from Niagara Mohawk to the cable company to National Grid now, sorry, to anybody that you pay monthly to have the money automatically deducted and taken out so you have have that banking information. and they do it. Now, I understand why they want to do it because they want to get paid. They want to get paid on time, right? I mean,
ask me. I try not to pay anything on time.
Yeah, that is why they do it. It's security for them. They frequently are willing to give you a lower rate if you allow them to do that.
But
like the mortgages.
I've always been nervous about doing that because I don't want. I know there's some degrees of having that information, but isn't that like just feeding this where you're just giving more and more information to more and more people, allowing more and more bad guys to steal your stuff?
Sure. What if there was a clerk sitting there who was up to no good? But I happen to, you know, fool myself into lull myself on this by saying the theory of the wildebeest holds here.
What?
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you watch the movies on television where they show you 1,000 or 10,000 wildebeest and the lion is going after one of them, you know, just wants to bring down one of them. So all those other wildebeest, because there are so many of them, survive. I think I'm one of the many wildebeests who are out there, and
the lion's not after you,
and that somebody else is going to get it. You know what I mean?
That's funny. That's funny.
I never thought of you as a wildebeest, but now I can see. Yeah, I can see.
I think it's really hard to know what to do as a consumer. You cited the one line saying "Stay home and change your passwords." The New York Times article says, "Don't change your passwords."
That's a great point.
Until we tell you to.
Wait a day or two.
I've been waiting. I don't have notes from any of the many online merchants and sites that I use. I don't have a single note from anyone. So does that mean I'm safe? I don't know. No. I don't even remember shopping at Target, and my whole card got compromised from that. I ended up stranded in Tunis without a way to pay a hotel bill.
See, the problem
because of Target. So it's all connected, and it's all very scary, and we don't have the answers for listeners.
See, the problem with the wildebeest metaphor here is that bad guys can take huge numbers of accounts. It's akin to a lion taking the whole row of wildebeests.
And entire herd.
Use them or not use them, they have them.
Yeah, but the reason, I want to just make it clear that the reason that they're telling you not to change your password yet is because until each of these
makes
it secure, right? The bad
they
guys
could
be watching you
right.
doing yeah. the new one.
That's it.
Yeah. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Gates.
The other thing here that I find to be troubling, of course, is that we have all of this going on, and we've been talking about the banking aspect of it, but there is also the email aspect of it. All of correspondence. I mean, we go to this whole subject of being monitored. All of that's being watched. All of that is being compromised as well.
Your policy on email ought to be, if it isn't already, to never put down anything that you wouldn't say directly to someone.
Yeah. And we've already
gotten being overheard.
We've already gotten criticized.
Great.
The people who write and maintain OpenSSL did not know about the bug, quote, for years. They only discovered it recently. However, in capital letters, the bug has been present since 2012. Please stop the fear-mongering and Muppet arm flailing.
Muppet arm flailing.
I expect WAMC to do better.
Okay, so what should we be saying? I think that's good.
What should we be telling the New York Times, for God's sake?
I think we addressed that. I said exactly this. You don't want to be the Chicken Little and say the sky is falling, but everything that I'm reading,
as Alan said,
on the front page of the New York Times, you look at any news source, it's the top story. The fact is we don't know. That seems to be fairly significant to me.
Here's one other thing. This story relates to something we talked about earlier this week, which is cyber attacks that the Pentagon is concerned about. This illustrates how vulnerable modern societies are because of our dependence on the internet and online trade. And the Pentagon apparently is spending much more on combating this sort of thing, even at a time when overall military budget is going down.
At the same time, they're trying to figure out how to get into the Chinese, internet.
Yeah, we need offensive weapons in this regard, the Pentagon believes, as well as a better defense.
Peter wants us to know what we've already said, which is that time to change passwords is after the fix.
That's correct.
Not before.
Thank
the
you,
fix.
Peter and Alan.
Yeah, that's it.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll move on to other stories, and it'll allow for more hate mail to accumulate.
Sure. I'm going to dig a bunker in the break.
Wildebeest.
Get some gold and, hide underground.
Stop the fear-mongering.
Tuna fish. It's all tuna fish. Get as much tuna fish in your basement as you can, because when money runs out, then you're going to be trading, bartering.
You see, when money is all electrons and essentially fake
tuna fish
that you never see, then you have trouble.
Well, I don't understand why you need bitcoins if all of our transactions are increasingly online and with paper.
Oh, by the way, I think you're right. I think that's a very big issue.
Sky is falling.
and I'm always the one to look on the bright side of life, but I look at that letter from the listener, and I'm saying, "Oh, Muppet arms. Well, those are at least thin. I've lost weight.
Muppet arms.
Oh my God!
You've done very well.
Muppet arms. Okay, we'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMT comes from Larry's Southwestern Sauces, offering locally produced Mexican cooking sauces for Cinco de Mayo party recipes, available in Price Chopper and ShopRite, larryssouthwesternsauces.com. Troy Chromatic Concerts, presenting violinist Hilary Hahn and piano soloist and composer Corey Smythe, April 16th at 7:30 p.m. at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, troychromaticconcerts.org. And Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery at Berkshire Health Systems, Plastic Reconstructive Enhanced Surgery and Laser Skin Treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santa Marina, BerkshireHealthSystems.org/plastics.
good morning and welcome back to our roundtable.
We're talking about the police.
No, well, we're talking about the most frightening song of all time, which was a big hit in the 60s.
We Built the City?
No, it was the Bright Elusive Butterfly of Love, which, as Rosemary and I were just discussing, was the most frightening stalker song of all time.
Yeah. Under the guise of love.
Yeah.
I know. I have no idea what you're talking about, and I don't want to know.
Well, you see, there were the Weavers, and then after that, a few other things happened.
Front page of the, you know, we're talking about front page of the New York Times about this bug, Heartbleed.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is also a great band name.
Yeah.
But front page of the Times Union, Paul McCartney coming to town.
Yeah.
That's huge. I mean, that's a
How
really big deal.
How could you not love Paul McCartney?
He's a Beatle. He's the Beatle. I mean, he's...
Oh, come on. I love Paul McCartney.
I love him.
I just think he's fabulous. We're so lucky to get him.
Don't even try to get a ticket.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, forget about it. I'm not even going to...
No,
I don't have $1,200 to bring my kids to that one.
Did you see that what the top price ticket was?
$289 or $200?
Well, see, that is somewhat of a misnomer.
Okay.
Well, he needs the money.
We can get into that. We can get into
this. He has a lot of alimony.
So, what did you say? What did you think that the top price ticket was?
$290. Yeah, close to $290.
That's $290 is the top price ticket for the floor. But then for people, so what they do is they sell that out. But then for the VIP packages and that kind of thing. Those are upwards of $1,500.
Yeah.
Those first 10 rows.
Yeah. Rex gets to sit up
anywhere from 1,000 to
Okay, do you know how many records you can buy for that? How many tunes on iTunes?
Here's the thing, Rosemary. I saw Paul McCartney, Sir Paul, at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn in June.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I paid a lot of money for it.
How much?
Yeah, how much, Joe?
$400.
Wow.
Oh my God, there are people starving in Africa.
Listen to me.
And it was a gift from my wife. But still.
Okay.
And I went alone because we couldn't afford to bring anybody else with me. But I have to say, when I walked out of that place at the end, I felt like it was worth
it. Yeah, no, it is. Wow. I saw him in 89 at the Garden, but it was about $40. And I was on the floor in great seats, you know.
Yeah.
And that was what?
Well, it's a big plus for Albany that he is coming here.
Great.
Frank Sinatra opened that stadium.
Yeah. I remember when Frank Sinatra was here.
And this is on a par with that. It's great.
And they were saying it was the biggest announcement at the Times Union, Knickerbocker Arena, Pepsi Arena, whatever you want to call it, in the last 10 years, with the last announcement being the Stones. But to me, this is bigger than the Stones.
Played there?
They're everywhere.
When did the Stones play at the Pepsi?
Paul McCartney.
10 years ago. Times Union. Really?
10 years ago.
And there, you know, there has been. Paul McCartney is not a has-been. Paul McCartney is part of us.
72?
And the Stones
72
couldn't.
What?
And they're 72 years old.
Which, to put it in perspective, I think about the age that Sinatra was when he played.
I was at that show. He was great at that.
I went in to do the pre thing for Channel 6, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
Did you meet Frank?
I did not.
Doopy. Hey, who's this over here?
Are you making fun of Italian accents?
Because I love Sinatra. I love Sinatra.
Yeah, he does.
And plus, he didn't have an Italian accent.
And you know who opened for him? Steven Eady.
There you go.
Wow.
Doesn't get better than that, does it?
Yeah, right. It does get better than that.
Speaking of that, here's a break.
We'll take a break. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. We will note breaking news that is coming out of the state of Pennsylvania in a school district outside of Pittsburgh. At least 20 students were injured Wednesday morning in a stabbing incident at the Franklin Regional Senior High School in the Pittsburgh area. It is, according to Dan Stevens, an emergency management agency spokesman, 4 people were flown to hospitals by helicopter. A message on the Franklin Regional School District website said all of its elementary schools were closed after the incident, and the middle school and high school students are secure. Authorities say that a suspect is in custody. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about it at some point on NPR and BBC. The school is in Murraysville, which is about 15 miles east of downtown Pittsburgh. So this is, and there's some reports that at least 20 students were stabbed, at least 20 students were injured. So we're still getting some conflicting reports initially as to what is going on, but the students range in age from 14 to 17 years of age. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that as the day goes on. As we continue our conversation this morning and go on to other issues, I do want to talk about Ukraine. It's obviously something that we have been speaking about consistently since the story has escalated. And the latest is the U.S. Warning, U.S. and NATO warn Russia against further intervention in Ukraine. And the background, Secretary of State John Kerry accused the Kremlin of fomenting the unrest, calling the protests the work of saboteurs whose machinations were as ham-handed as they are transparent. That was speaking to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He said, "No one should be fooled, and believe me, no one is fooled by what could potentially be a contrived pretext for military intervention, just as we saw in Crimea. As the government in Kiev moved to assert control over pro-Russian protesters across eastern Ukraine, the United States and NATO issued stern warnings to Moscow against further intervention in the country's affairs amid continuing fears of an eventual Russian incursion."
Okay, looking at me. So here's my take on the situation today. The people I work with, the investigative reporters in Russia and in Eastern Europe.
Who do you work with anyway?
Not the CIA, the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. And they are taking a look at this massive new exercise of soft power by Russia throughout the whole region. Ukraine and the Baltic states are seeing, for example, tons of money going into NGOs that promote Russia as a great place. They are fighting, for example, educational reforms in the Baltics that want to remove all mention of an occupation of the Baltic states by Russia. They are giving advice to Russian lovers in all of these areas, and there are many, they are of Russian descent, who want to fight new nationalistic movements. So it's not just the military buildup. There is a concentrated effort by Russia, by Putin, to have wider influence, if not actually territorial control over these areas. It's very frightening. The media is being used in this way massively. Russia today used to be a source of information about the region for English speakers. No more. It's very propagandistic now. You remember the commentator who left when the Ukraine-Crimean crisis was starting, said, "I just can't be part of this anymore." Well, what she meant by "it" is just now becoming clear.
Alan?
Pass? No, I think what she said, what Rosemary said, it is very unclear. The only thing that occurs to me as I listened to you, Rosemary, is how we differentiate between what Putin is doing and what we do.
Oh, glad to hear you say that, because we do differentiate, and ought we to?
Oh, no, there's a real differentiation.
Okay.
In other words, there's some real space. There really is. However, when we propagandize about some of our alleged enemies, Cuba, otherwise, we know that we're not exactly even-handed about the whole thing. Sure, I happen to be a big fan of I happen to be a big believer that Castro is a very big dictator. I do. And but on the other hand, his people in that country fight like crazy for him and would be at the shoreline when anybody came in, because they think, even though he's a dictator, or they may not, that his reforms are worth having, as opposed to the way in which traditional capitalism works.
Okay, I don't know. Maybe I've been in academia too long. I do not see a differentiation.
What do you mean? I was there almost 50 years. You haven't been
there
too
long.
Okay,
I must just be a better thinker then, Alan. But
yeah.
I don't see a differentiation between what we do, the Cuban Twitter incident, and what Putin is doing. And the motives to him must seem the same. He believes he seriously is under attack within his Russian stronghold by nationalists and by Western supporters, who indeed we have put all his former parts of his country, if you will, into NATO. We have isolated him. He's not incorrect in this. I don't like what's happening. I really feel for the people of Eastern Europe and the Baltics who have been trying to maintain and build democracies and independence. But is it different than what we do? Can't see it. Can't really see it.
I got it.
By the way, speaking of safety and security, I hope you don't drive a Chevy Cobalt.
I don't. No.
Yeah, that's a heavy key ring.
That's a heavy key ring.
Yeah, that's true. No, like, look at that.
That's because Joe just handed Rosemary her keys.
Well, I've never seen her keys before, but we had talked about this issue of the GM cars and the ignition, and they said that the part of the problem was the heavy key ring. But you've got a lot on that key ring. Look at that.
It's about 3 pounds.
And I drive a Toyota Prius. And all I heard on the way in today is I held onto the steering wheel for dear life. Now, I don't know if the Prius is another recall. There's a huge recall.
The second global one in what, a month?
Yeah, yeah.
Short period of time.
I got to call them up. Get over there.
Yeah. Before something happens.
Yeah. I love my Prius.
There we go.
Even if it kills you.
No. Well, right. Well, no. It reminds me of a girl I once knew.
I think we should vet all these comments with the legal department before, before something really bad happens. You know, let's just move on.
I always say that. No matter what the...
What, that it reminds you of a former girlfriend?
Yeah. I always say that. Reminds me of a girl I once knew.
All right. So, Rosemary does not approve. Let the record show. Okay. Let us go on to this story, which I also thought was interesting, which is more mothers have been staying home with their children since the recession ended, but a growing number of them say that's primarily because they can't find a job, according to a new study. Almost 3 in 10 mothers with children under 18 living with them are stay-at-home moms. An analysis of the Census Bureau data by the Pew Research Center showed...
I think Ray should go first.
Why? Okay, no, I was just you missed your cue.
Oh, did I say? Oh, it reminds me of a girl I once knew.
No,
oh,
Pew,
what?
The Pew Center.
Oh,
by
Pew.
There you go. Yeah. That is a three percentage point jump. Listeners, you know, anticipated. They expected. We can't let them down. That is a 3 percentage point jump from the depth of the recession in 2008. So, Ray, talk about stay-at-home moms.
What?
Well, you have a wonderful partner who you met here.
Yeah. She's not stay-at-home
at WAMC, who was, as you had your children.
She stayed home, but
and
that was a conscious decision.
That's right. And
to raise the children.
That's right. And now is going back into the workforce. Right.
Right? Well, this is an interesting study, I suppose.
Well, I think what's interesting about the study is that on the face of it, it's basically saying, well, more women are staying home with their children. And you could end there, but then the reasoning behind it is, yes, more women are staying home with their children, but they don't want to. They want to go out and work, but they can't find jobs. And I think that is doubly problematic, one, because of the recession, and two, because it's difficult for women to find jobs in the workforce that are...
That pay enough to cover daycare.
That's right.
Well,
exactly.
When Roselle and I married, she was a full-time teacher. And we spent pretty much one after taxes, one salary on daycare.
Yeah,
I mean it was just
and that
two
was
ways
two
back.
Children, and yes. Prices are higher now, so that's a big
it was
onerous
a long
burden.
Time ago, trust
yeah,
me.
big onerous
38
burden.
Years ago.
This study is by Devera Cohn, who is an old friend, used to work at the Washington Post. She is very into numbers, so the analysis is a lot richer than we're making it sound.
Right,
here.
Immigrants, for instance, a much higher percentage.
Immigrant mothers are, by cultural and tradition, are much more likely to spend time at home with their kids.
And you just raised the C question, the cultural question, which,
correct.
Of course, is very important. We have major wars with people we know who say, you know, how dare you leave your children with someone else?
Well, there is a whole new parenting movement. You'll remember Time a few years ago put it on the cover of their magazine that calls, it's kind of the opposite of the Dr. Spock, let them grow up independent. It's like, concentrate, especially in the early years. You need to be there every
helicopter
minute.
Helicopter parents.
Breastfeeding is in a big new vogue, certainly since I was having my children. And that requires much more involvement by the mothers staying home. So that plays a part into it. I think the recession is huge. I think this changes over just a few years. If you still look at the numbers now compared to 1970, for example, you'll see there's far more women in the workplace, mothers in the workplace, than there were at that time. It's just in a more recent time that we're seeing this uptick.
And some of these, workplaces are very good about, you know, creating opportunities to go home, to breastfeed, to express milk, and to do all of those things, which I don't think existed years and years ago.
This is one of those areas that we have seen improvement. When I had one of my children, there was no maternity leave. I had to call my newspaper office from the delivery room and say, hey, I'm starting that vacation I told you about. That's how crazy it was. So we have definitely come a long way, but are we on a par with Europe? No. Mm. Are we on where we should be, where we could afford to be? No, we are not. And we have this conflict about whether women ought to be basically paid or supported or subsidized if they stay at home. We don't see the raising of children as a social matter.
Well, also, but you just mentioned this business about the Spock versus the other thing is the wisdom. I mean, I don't like to brag about my children, so I'm not going to, but they did have daycare. And they've done very, very well in life.
Yeah, all the studies show, you know, that you're not going to ruin your children if they have babysitters or daycare. That I think we are past that point. But the point is now whether you can afford dependable daycare. It's really expensive.
Oh, it is. It really is.
And that had to be a factor in the choice your family made, right? Because you have more than two kids, and it's expensive.
Yeah, it
is. You would have had to have a much better job than WAMC to support that.
Oh. time for that break, Joe.
Let's take that break. We'll check out Ray's Pay Stub. We'll get back to you. We'll be right back after this short message.
Support for WAMC comes from the Black Sheep Downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butterscratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Boeing Boeing by Mark Camaletti, weekends April 18th through May 4th in the Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. And Curtis Lumber, proudly serving their communities for over 100 years, providing lumber, building materials, doors, windows, paint, and more for 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel discussion. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. You got anything, Alan?
Well, I just heard from Roselle, who said, let's go to McCartney.
Ah, well, all right.
So there's that. Okay. Lucy says, for the U.S. to criticize any country for meddling in other countries' affairs is the height of hypocrisy. We might think and or say we are promoting democracy, but what we are and have been historically doing is promoting the interests of large corporations and the politicians who they support, says Lucy.
Lucy, I agree with you. Good letter.
Do you see anything else?
I don't.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't either.
Okay, then let's go.
All right. So
wait, Bob.
What about Bob?
Here's how to protect yourself from massive security flaw that's taken over the internet. Okay, well,
that sounds like a commercial.
Yeah,
I think
this is great.
Hire me.
Last longer. Thanks, Bob.
What do you mean last longer?
Nothing.
It's just
some of the email we get.
The day when the nation collectively has made enough money to pay its total tax burden for the year is 3 days later this year, according to a new report. According to a report released Monday by Tax Foundation, this year Tax Freedom Day falls 111 days into 2014 on April 21st. By April 21st, Americans will have made enough to pay the $3 trillion in federal taxes and $1.5 trillion in state taxes, more than they will spend on food, clothing, and housing combined.
Hey, but wait a second now. I'm proud of that little square foot of an aircraft carrier that my taxes are supporting. What's the matter with you people? Aren't you proud to? And how about all of the stuff that you don't know about that we're spending money on?
You say that facetiously, but
exactly.
I actually am not going to complain about this. I sit here and call for better health care.
But do you get it?
Well, the way to get it is definitely not to cut taxes, even though that would personally benefit me.
I don't
what
mind.
Happened to the idea of the common good?
No. I want to argue with you about this, Rosemary Arneo.
Okay, go.
I mean, I truly feel I have no problem with taxes either. I have problem with taxes that are misspent. And I have taxes, so the problem with taxes is that half of the taxes that we pay are for very unclear purposes.
I it's hard to disagree with that. On the other hand, the way to make sure that money is parceled off so that you cut off something and overfund something else in ways we don't like is to make that pot of money smaller. And that's what we have done consistently since the, well, since Reagan, really. We've been cutting back on taxes because people like that. Who wants to pay out money on things you can't, you know, hold or wear or eat? And yet, the idea of the common good requires a lot of money.
But we haven't been cutting back on taxes, as this clearly shows. Listen, it's later and later.
Than you think.
The tax-free day is now later than it's been. It fluctuates. It certainly does go up and down. So I don't think it's the latest it's ever been. But, I mean, clearly, you say we cut taxes, but yet we're now 111 days in the year before you're at that point where
you can eat.
Okay, I have to study this before I come back, but my thought is that it has to do with much more than just taxes we pay. It has to do with whether we have jobs, what salaries we're being paid, whether those salaries have kept up.
They're saying the 3 days is due to the recession. And they also further break it down and say that if federal borrowing is included, the group calculated the tax freedom day would fall 15 days later on May 6th.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So,
for what that's worth.
So, I mean, George Bush cut taxes, and Governor Cuomo is cutting taxes, and yeah, we do pay less than we ought to be.
Well, are we cutting taxes from the rate of increase, or are we cutting taxes from zero? In other words, is the guy on Long Island who pays $25,000 on a tiny...
I've heard him about him before.
A tiny little house. Is that guy paying much less this year? I mean, how does it work? I don't know.
We need an expert on here.
All right. We'll work on that. Let's move on and go to the Afghan election story. The Afghan presidential election on Saturday appeared to be substantially cleaner than the widely discredited 2009 election, according to complaint figures released Tuesday by the authorities in Kabul. None of the leading candidates have said so far that they would dispute this year's balloting, whose results have not yet been announced. Widespread complaints about ballot box stuffing in 2009 led the country's Independent Election Complaints Commission to order a recount, which cost President Karzai the outright majority that he initially appeared to have secured, though he still won a second term.
I was just going to say one thing. People will not complain, right, until they lose.
Right.
So, in other words, you're not going to say before the votes are counted, because then, God forbid, you should win. Then you don't want to have been on record as saying they're trying to steal it from me.
Well, in 2009, there were an enormous number of complaints before the official results came out because it was so obvious what was going on.
Sure.
And because everyone could see that it was going to go to Karzai. This time it's a little less clear. One side, it went on the guy from the World Bank, former World Bank official, and he used to work for Karzai, went on his website.
Abdul Abdul?
No. The other guy. I can't say their names. I'm not even going to try. You guys, I'm print. You guys have to say their names right, not me. But he went on his website. One of the candidates went on the website and claimed he had won by 57% of the vote. And the other guy, Abdul Abdullah, who I can't pronounce, went on his website and said, well, I guess I should be happy that he thought I got any votes at all. So there's a certain amount of, their stability here. They're making light of it. And I think that's good. This election is enormously important. I wish more people were interested in it. In the United States, we have a huge investment in Afghanistan. And
don't you think we're cynical about the whole thing?
I don't think we know anything about it and have tuned off on it for years, including how many American soldiers have died in Afghanistan?
Yeah, good
point. Do you know? Yeah. I mean, we just don't pay attention to any of it. And now what happens is we'll see with Karzai out, and he's trying to get back in and retain some control, whether our investment had any good at all.
I wish you guys were up when I get up at 2:30 in the morning and start listening to the Beeb. They had a huge story today, about half an hour, about the Indian elections, the largest democracy in the world.
Yeah, that's an interesting story.
And they were talking about the the foolproof voting machines that they have, and comparing the Indian guy who was talking about it was saying, unlike Florida, Ours is foolproof. We've offered it to all kinds of experts to try to break it down. They can't do it. We don't have anything like paper ballots or hanging chads. Everybody votes electronically. Even the people who are illiterate vote electronically.
I've actually written about elections around the world, and this is another area where the United States, the biggest, oldest, you know, best democracy ever in history, falls way behind. Let's just talk, forget the machines, which we're horrible about. How about, why do we vote on Tuesday? Why don't we vote in a weekend like many other newer democracies do? More people could participate. It would be easier. Why do we have to go to a place? We have the online. We can shop and do everything else online. Why? I guess voter security.
Yeah.
you know why? Because there's always somebody who figures that if you vote on the weekends or you let people pre-register or something, they're going to have not as good a break as if they did.
More of the wrong kind of voters will show up.
In quotes.
And just to answer your question, from 2001 to 2014, 3,430 soldiers, both U.S. and British forces, coalition forces, have died. And in the U.S., that's 2,300 in Afghanistan and Iraq, with most of those being in Afghanistan.
So we're talking basically it's 9/11 all over again. And
sure.
We don't pay attention.
And that is, by the way, that is according to a report from Operation Enduring Freedom, and that has the eye casualties report, which is available online if you want to check it out. They do a daily report.
Not the U.S. government, oddly enough.
No. We hope that's where they get the information from, but who knows. I was going to start another story, but I'll do that tomorrow. We'll be back, and we can have another story then because we're out of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
If I've said anything to annoy anybody, please forgive me.
Okay. My thanks to the panel.
You always surprise me. That's so funny.
Thanks to the panel this morning. Dr. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Rosemary Armeo, thank you very much for being here, as always. We'll be back after this short break.